copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to be with you. My name is William Edgar. I am a professor of cultural apologetics in a graduate school in Philadelphia. I grew up in France and Switzerland, but have been in this country now, America, for 30 years. And I was involved with ELF since the very beginning. I think I was at the second meeting, maybe not the first, but we used to meet in a little village in Hungary called Sopron. And then it moved to a bigger town in Hungary, and then it moved to Poland. I stopped coming about 4 years ago because I had a heart attack and wasn't supposed to travel. But this is one of the silver linings of the awful COVID pandemic, is that you can meet through Zoom and other technologies. It's not as good as live by any means, but it's better than nothing. So the topic this morning is apologetics and COVID. And what I'd like to do is go for a little bit and then turn this into a discussion group, because that's always the best part. So I'll give you some thoughts and then let's have a nice discussion, and maybe Lee could moderate that. All right, in the noisy babble about how to confront the coronavirus, there are very few voices, at least to any significant degree, that appeal to transcendence. Now, God is often not blamed in the popular mind. He is with some. But there's just a little reference to him, with some good exceptions. Hopes are pinned on social distancing, science. In this country, we can beat this thing. And occasionally you hear really rebellious voices. No government is going to tell me what I can do and not do. And the good news is that some amazing progress has been made. The statistics are still bleak, and we don't know what all the consequences are going to be. The world is suffering enormously from disease, joblessness, schools closed, isolation, and just simply COVID fatigue and even depression. Now, we should give credit where credit is due. A number of efforts from researchers and scientists to healthcare providers are most impressive. The best minds in the world have been put to the task of finding a way forward, and we thank heaven for them. And it makes it all the more depressing when results don't come as fast as we'd like. And in some places, things are even getting worse. We should beware of the blame game. Although attempts to blame China for the spread of the virus have been tried, they're actually factually futile. There's attempts to blame governments, all kinds of things. And of course, not all has been handled well. So you can blame somebody somewhere for things not going as fast as we'd like them. And it has to be admitted that some countries have controlled the range of the virus better than others. When I prepared this talk, it appeared that some developed countries, such as mine, the United States, have not done as good a job as, say, Taiwan or Liberia or New Zealand. This is maybe because they had previous experience. They have a stronger government control than we do. Today vaccinations are more and more available. My wife and I have both been vaccinated. We still are advised great caution. Hope is returning in some quarters, some of it probably over-enthusiastic. So where do we as Christians, how do we make sense of this, and how do we not only live with it, but act upon it? Like many people, I've been buried in the Psalms. I've derived great comfort from them, though not without a sometimes torturous path to get there. In fact, to be honest, at first, there's something confusing about many Psalms. There's a lot of judgment. There's accusation. There is comfort intermingled, but it's not the Hollywood happy ending. Many Psalms are interspersed with complaints, which makes them all the more endearing to me. Lots of worries about enemies. And of course, in many places, you can identify with the fact that there are physical enemies, military enemies. In no place is there an absence of some kind of oppression and enmity. But then almost all the Psalms, with a few exceptions, contain a degree of comfort. Here's an example taken almost at random, Psalm 80. It begins with a plea to God, "Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock, you who are enthroned upon the cherubim, shine forth before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh, stir up your might and come to save us. Restore us, O God. Let your face shine that we may be saved." Now, it may strike some of us as odd or even irreverent that we ask God to give ear and, as it were, remind him of who he is. But this is a very important point. Many of the Psalms are engaged in this sort of argument. Does not God remember who he is? Well, of course he does, but he keeps silence from time to time. One of my favorite Psalms is 13, which opens with, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me?" Can God ever forget his people? The idea seems offensive, and yet the psalmist dares to say it or suggest it. Now, this particular psalm ends on a note of confidence, but not until a lot of complaints have been aired. Some psalms don't even have the note of confidence. 88, for example, it's almost entirely a psalm of lament and complaint. Psalm 80 does the same thing. "O Lord God of hosts, how long will you be angry with your people and their prayers? You have fed them with the bread of tears." It's a powerful image. "And given them tears to drink in full measure. You make us an object of contention for our neighbors, and our enemies laugh among themselves. Restore us, O Lord, O God of hosts. Let your face shine that we may be saved." Now, this may seem overly negative. In fact, it's amazingly honest. And perhaps this sort of plea is not very consistent with some modern people's outlook. We want results now, we want an explanation now, and we're loath to sound weak. And much of the rest of Psalm 80 argues for consistency, if you want to put it that way. Why is God, who once cleared the ground for Israel to become greatly privileged, now seem to destroy the same ground, verses 8 to 13? And this, in the bargain, gives credence to their enemies. This too is a rather foreign idea to modern Europeans. Enemies, God's enemies. It's true that the Psalms were written in a season of redemptive history, when the promised land, God's vineyards and so forth, were images of good final things. And the enemies of the theocracy, though real, were in some sense portents of the great battle over the coming of the kingdom. Still, such pleas are real for any age. Jesus himself talked about the hour of darkness coming upon him and begged the Father in the garden for another way besides Calvary. So there's nothing to be ashamed about in asking God, where is he? How long? One of my favorite authors, indeed, I suspect yours also, is Albert Camus. Not a clear-cut Christian, though there's some mystery about where he is in his faith. But during the Second World War, he wrote maybe his most powerful novel, The Plague, La Peste. And the plague has three levels. It's the story of a kind of bubonic plague that comes to invade the town of Oran in North Africa. It's very realistic, rats and deaths and people accusing one another and so on. Remarkable insight into human nature. Then the second level is more, it's related, but it's about how the darkness of the Nazis had become the plague of Europe. And in similar ways, there was scapegoating and cruelty and neglect and so forth. Again, very insightful. And the third level is his meditations on the problem of evil. And there are several main characters in it. The priest, Panelu, begins by blaming the people and laying a guilt trip on them until his own daughter contracts it, and he finally gets it himself, and he realizes things aren't so simple. The doctor, who is actually modeled on a wonderful doctor in Le Chambon, where Camus wrote the bulk of it, Dr. Rieu, tells his young interlocutor, I can fight the plague and I can fight the creation as I see it only by fighting God. And then the novel ends on sort of a question mark, and it's great food for thought. For Christians, we certainly can track with his sensitivity to plague existence. It's amazingly prescient of our plague. And we certainly can pose with Camus the problem of evil. Where we differ is that the doctor in Le Chambon was a believer, a Huguenot, who not by fighting God, but by an alliance with God, could fight the plague. And those telling words of Rieu, I fight the creation, are foreign to Christians, because we don't fight the creation, we fight the cancer and the plague that have invaded it. The original creation, of course, is good and very good. And our problem is not where we are and in the creation, but our problem is our distance from God. Now, we who live on this side of the cross and the resurrection know that all things have been accomplished, though in an inaugural way. Just the same, God's silence is still palpable. His anger is real. Dare we say it, whatever else is going on in COVID-19, don't we have to say there's an element of judgment? We don't want to make the mistake of saying, well, here's the finger of God and we know what we've done wrong. And it's a great hardship given by God for his own reasons. But there is anger, but also a warning and an admonition. The New Testament is just as realistic as the Old on these points. The book of Revelation delivers page after page about God's judgments. This is one of the hardest points, I think, to accept and later, and also to convince other people about, because to say that we're under the wrath of God automatically invites us to say, well, what did we do wrong? And who did it? That's something that the Bible doesn't encourage us to do. In fact, just the opposite. You know, when the Tower of Siloam fell on the victims, the disciples wanted to know, were they really bad? And Jesus says, no, we're all just as bad. It's an equal opportunity disease. And God, for his own reasons, judges sometimes and alleviates in others. But unless we acknowledge this view, and I hope we can discuss this together because it's controversial, we will probably condemn ourselves to live in false hopes and in denial of the severity of our plight. But now the Psalms go on, most of them. Three times our psalmist asks God to restore us again. He asks God to turn again, to look down from heaven for the sake of his beloved. Give us life and we will call upon your name, verse 18. The same God whose hand is on the man of his right hand, we understand what that means, is also upon us through the ultimate man of his right hand, Jesus Christ. Now, seeking relief from the pandemic is all important. And we ought to do all we can because God will restore us and he has restored us inaugurally. We, if we're going to love our neighbor and help him or her out of deep suffering, must fight the plague, not the creation, but fight the plague. And there's something even more important than fighting the plague with all we've got and supporting science and supporting vaccinations and all the rest of it. And that is not turning our backs on God, but rather finding ways to worship him and praise him and asking him not to forget us. And that means the most important lesson of all, at least to me, that we know God will do this, but he will do it in his own time and in his own way. Yes, support science. Yes, get vaccinated. Yes, wear masks. But also recognize that the only final relief is going to be when God decides in his own timing how and when it's going to happen. I work a lot with African American music, and one of my favorite Negro spirituals is, it goes like this. God don't come when we want him to, but he's always right on time. So to put it, I hope not too sentimentally, we have an on-time God. Very hard to learn to live with that, but much more important than to either get angry with him or to press buttons and hope for automatic solutions that aren't in his timing. These are generalities. I can go into detail about technical aspects of COVID relief. I'm not a healthcare provider, but I've followed these things pretty closely. But I think the important lesson for Christians is that we come to God who is mysteriously sovereign over such things as plagues, which our planet has been victimized by over the centuries. From the 14th century to the horrible pandemic of 1918 to our own time and to many other times. Turn to God, ask him for relief, but ask him for the grace to draw close to him, to believe in the rightness of his own timing. As the German hymn says, God does all things well. It's hard to believe, but it's true. And we know that because of Christ. So those are some thoughts. Well, the Lord bless you and keep you, and take refuge in the Psalms. I think you'll find great ultimate hope. Jesus said, in the world you have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. All right, bye for now.